This is Robin from the Coven House, and welcome to the Coven House's Witching Hour. I am very excited about tonight. I have been talking about this all week long. Everybody is super pumped. Tonight on the show, we have Chad, and he is a pagan.
Hey, Robin, how's it going?
Good.
So, good long week for you?
It was a very good long week and a very good Valentine's Day. How was yours?
I was about the same. It was pretty good.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, do you want to talk about a little bit about your rituals, what you do being a pagan?
Being a pagan? What parts of it you want to hear about?
Well, what did you do on Valentine's Day? Was there any rituals or anything like that?
Valentine's Day, I did pretty much the same thing I do every day. I woke up, I grabbed my runes, I grabbed my oracle, grabbed my coffee, stirred some cinnamon in it, and sat in my window box. And meditated. Pulled my rune for the day. My rune for the day was actually the love rune.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And then I went to work.
Okay, well, for everybody else that's out there, there's a whole bunch of questions just in that sentence. A, why did you put cinnamon in your coffee?
Why did I put cinnamon in my coffee? Because I put cinnamon in my coffee most mornings. You stir in good intention for your day. Stir it in a clock. In a sunwise manner, and you place your intention for the day into your coffee, and then you drink your intention down that way.
Excellent. That sounds wonderful. Sounds very magical. And then a window box, you were saying.
Window box. I call it my window box. It's where I do my meditation every morning. I have a big bay window with a bench in the front of it, right in front of the house.
So there's a lot of meditation behind paganism.
Mm-hmm. There is. There's a lot of, in my meditation, because everybody's goes different ways. Mine, I'm connecting with the gods and the goddesses every morning, asking them to bless my day, to follow me through the day and guide me the right way so that my day turns out the right way. I find if I don't do that, my day is not guided. My day is flippant. It's here, it's there.
So you set the intentions for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have a day where you set your intentions and it just goes to shit?
Oh, of course. Of course. Some days, if you just ask for a god or a goddess, you get Loki. And he comes in and he teaches you lessons that day. There's nothing bad about the day. It's just not as you expected it. But he's showing you the other side of what you want. And it's showing you things that maybe you're not looking to learn that day, or maybe they see that you need to learn something else, so that's who you get that day, because he's the one who makes you think. He's the one who plays tricks on your day.
He's the trickster.
But you can learn a lot.
So when you were talking about praying to your gods, how many do you, and which ones are they?
Mostly, I take them all as one. It's either the god or the goddess, depending on the day. In my own personal belief of the god and the goddess, each god or goddess or deity, however you see to see them, they are the goddess of love, the god of war, the goddess of intelligence or whatever there is. If you take all of the different gods and goddesses and you put them, you take the goddesses and you take them and you put them together, in my belief and in my view, they are each an aspect of the goddess. And if you take all the gods and you put them together, they become each an aspect of the god. Because if you look at them singularly, they all have one kind of thing that they're behind. But if you look at any person, we each have different pieces of us that are guided by different thoughts, by different wants, by different things. And if you broke a person up into those extra pieces, then you would have all these pieces. But you can't be one without everything. So that's how I see it. If I need certain things in my life, I will reach out to that certain deity. But in a general aspect, setting intentions for the day, if I feel like taking on the harder, rougher side, the stronger more forceful side of the day, I will go with the god that day. If I want to take on the softer, the more thoughtful, the more caring, compassionate side of the day, I will go with the goddess that day. Mostly I end up going towards the goddess more often than the god, just because I find that the path of my life flows a lot better on that side.
So you have better luck with the goddess than you do with the god.
I do.
Just because you had mentioned you're like, Loki will come out. So who would the female goddess kind of represent? Like a Lilith, a Hecate, Freya?
I would say probably Lilith.
Lilith, yeah.
I would say Lilith and Loki, in my perspective, are quite a fair match.
Yes, wonderful. That's, yeah, no, for sure, for sure. Mm-hmm. So, as a pagan, what kind of tools would you use when casting your spells or doing your rituals?
Pretty much the same as a pagan who follows Wicca, a witch, a sorcerer. On my altar, I have my bowl of salt for offerings. I have my libation cup. I have a athame, my wand. And then from there, I pretty much pick whatever else out of my tools that I think that ritual or spell or workings is needed at that point in time. But those are my main ones that I have all the time.
And you use candles and runes,
candles,
too.
Candles, runes.
Do you want to kind of explain a little bit how the runes work?
The runes work a lot like tarot. The runes are so much older. They go back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. They've been seen on pre-medieval things. They weren't used as an alphabet till recently. By recently, I mean within the last couple thousand years. But literally, they work just like the tarot. You can do a three rune. You can do a one rune pick. You can cast them. You can just pick the runes out of the bag and then cast those runes. They do have reversal meanings as well. I don't really follow much of the reversal meanings. I just take the rune for the rune. If I grab a handful of runes and cast them, I take the runes that are face up, and those are the runes that have been cast for my day. Is how I interpret the runes.
So it kind of gives you a little bit of a heads up on how the day is going to be going, hey?
It does. It does. And, like, if I just want a basic overview, I'll just cleanse, center and ground. I'll find my sacred space within myself, pick one rune, pull that rune out, hold on to it, feel the rune, pull the energy out of it, and then I will flip the rune over and find its meaning.
Have you ever had a situation where the runes just did not want to communicate with you? Because that has happened in the past.
Yeah, every time I get the blank rune.
The blank one, hey?
The blank rune. Basically, on those days, the runes are telling you that this is your day. You're going to figure it out. You're going to choose it.
So they won't always tell you everything.
They
that
won't
you,
always.
They
tell
won't
you.
Tell you what you want to hear.
You know, I don't think they're ever going to. I don't think you could walk up to my. I don't think I could ever walk up to my bag of runes and pick them up. Yeah. Think about it. Find an answer to my question, and then just go from there and go, I want to hear this. I have never once been told by my runes exactly what I wanted to hear, but I have been told by my runes what I need to hear.
It's like a really good friend in your back pocket right there.
It is. It's like a really good friend that'll never lie to you and say, yeah, I think what you just thought there, said there, that's exactly right. They call you on your shit. A lot of people don't like that about the runes or tarot or oracle. But really, at the end of the day, they are one of the only things in this plane that we're having this human existence in that will call your shit every time without flaw.
So it's not for the faint-hearted, everybody. Not for the faint-hearted.
No. It's not something you just jump into and think, oh, this is going to fix all my problems. No, sometimes it shows you other problems that you didn't even know you were having.
Exactly. Well, there was a couple things I wanted to talk to you about, too. I know that you are super well-versed in proper cemetery etiquette, so I know everybody's been really excited to hear about the magical side behind the whole cemetery idea. No one ever thinks about this at all, But you actually educated me a little bit there that one day, so I want to talk about that a bit.
All right, so starting off with cemetery etiquette, what I want to get into some of what I see.
Let's heed some warnings, too. Let's heed some warnings.
We're going to be heeding some warnings here when we get closer to the end.
We're going to heed on.
We already have a friend who needed these warnings.
I know.
So, a lot of times people, they just look at the cemetery and they think, oh, that's where the people are buried and that's where you go to whatever.
Yeah.
Nobody ever takes into account that the cemetery is one of the most sacred spaces on this plane. That's where we put our dead. That's where we celebrate them. That's where we entrust them to be safe for all of time. That's where we put them so that they could rest in peace. And then you get, because I hate the term baby witch. I can't stand the term baby witch. I prefer witchling.
Witchling. I like witchling better.
And you get witchlings. And you get whoever. And they just go traipsing through.
And a witchling is a young gaffer that's just starting to get their wings wet.
Mm-hmm. Right? They haven't really secured the besm together. They really haven't figured out how to fill the cauldron yet. But they're trying.
You got to learn how to drive first before you can GTA that. So. Mm-hmm.
You do. Because if you GTA before you drive, you're in a ditch.
Yeah, or getting a hooker, so.
Stuck in a tree and looking at your broom. Not that we actually fly, because I've had that question before, too. Can
yes.
Brooms actually fly?
No.
No. No, no. We're bound by physics.
Yes.
So, the first and foremost, I think the people need to understand is that when you're approaching a cemetery for any reason, there's certain etiquette that you need to take into account when you're entering the cemetery. If you're just entering the cemetery to go and pay your respects, stuff like that, there's still slight etiquette you need to do. You need to... Okay, so when a cemetery is built, and then once the cemetery is open and ready to go, and that first person dies, and they leave this earth, and their body's left behind, we take that body and we commit it to the earth in the cemetery. Well, that person gets a far more important, far more greater eternal job. What their soul ends up becoming is the guardian. So they're the first person put into that cemetery. So the cemetery becomes their celestial job.
So the very first body to ever go into that sacred ground becomes that guardian of the cemetery.
The guardian of the cemetery.
The very first one. And forever.
And forever.
Forever and ever and ever.
They are the first person set in there. And they are there to guard over the souls that are placed there.
Is there an assistant manager?
I don't think there's an assistant manager. That'd it's kind of cool. Like a one-horse town.
Could you imagine an HR in
right,
the cemetery?
An HR department.
An yeah, HR department.
I'm sorry, Mr. Guardian, you can't do that right in here. You got to go and fill out this form. So they're placed there as the guardian.
Yes.
In my own personal beliefs, I believe that that soul is chosen and for their traits and for their aspects. And they're chosen to be there. Maybe somebody might not believe that, but that's what I believe. And they're there for eternity to guard that cemetery. So if you're not going for a ritual, if you're not going for any magical or celestial reason, you still need to pay homage to the guardian.
So leaving an offering.
You leave an offering, even and just acknowledge him on your way in.
And that's why we bring flowers when we visit mm-hmm. our loved ones that
exactly.
have passed on. Because it's an offering. You're leaving an offering to that person.
You are. Passed. But everybody also skips the offering at the cemetery. Mm. The guardian, his job is to protect every single soul within those gates. When your soul is in that property, he's to look after you as well. Even though we're still here in our material body. Because you're a soul. When it comes down to it, we are all celestial energy. And he is there to protect all souls within those gates. But if you don't, it would be like just showing up at somebody's house and just kind of totally dismissing that they're there, walking in, open their fridge, grabbing a beer, turning on their TV. Heck, walk up to their altar and start using that too. Why don't you, right?
Pushing your boundaries.
Pushing your boundaries.
So what happens if you really piss them off?
If you really piss them off, and you screw up while you're in that cemetery doing a ritual, and you bring something out that... Because not all souls that are in that cemetery are good. Nope. Some are... We're not nice people in this life. But at the end of life, in our human existence, in our human experience, we give everybody the same respect. Because we all lived. Okay? Maybe you disrespected him on the way in. Maybe he lets somebody leave with you. Maybe you take somebody home with you. Maybe they start fucking with you in your daily life. Right?
Yeah. So, like, sore stomachs, sore backs.
Sore stomachs, sore backs.
Having a weird, like... weird sense to go back to the cemetery. That's another one. That's another way to find out if you have, like, if you know whether mm-hmm. or not a soul has attached itself to you. Lights will start flickering at your house. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that really can put an end to that is to apologize.
Yeah. And so when I go to the cemetery for any reason, whether I'm going to see my grandparents, whether I'm going to lay somebody to rest, or whether I'm going there to use the energy. Maybe I'm going there to gather some graveyard dirt. Whatever the reason is. I bring alcohol. I bring tobacco. And I bring a gemstone. I bring a pendulum. And I ask when I enter that cemetery to have permission for the entrance. No matter what. My pendulum says yes. I leave the offerings. I go in. I conduct my business. When I leave, I make sure to thank them for allowing me to have this experience.
So you use your pendulum to kind of talk with them, to kind of negotiate type
deal. Talk to negotiate. Sometimes some people will feel their answer. Sometimes some people... I had one friend years back, the answer was a straight up no, and when he asked the question, he didn't even have to pull out a pendulum, cards, nothing. He got this ice cold, gut wrenching feeling, and he was like, nope, tonight's not the night. He just turned around and walked away. He just knew. For witchlings, people who maybe don't feel as much, maybe you're not as empathetic. A divination tool is a great way to communicate with them. Some people, if they have psychic connection, can psychically talk back and forth with them. Me, I like the pendulum because it is one of two answers, even though a pendulum gives three answers. The pendulum gives yes, no, and maybe.
Yes.
If it's yes, I'll enter. If it's no, I won't. If it's maybe, I don't. Because maybe's not a clear answer. Maybe's not yes.
Maybe it's definitely not a yes.
Maybe it's definitely not a yes, but maybe
sounds
not a no.
Like a trap.
Right? So, a young friend of ours that went had no clue about etiquette.
Nope. Went no, she did not.
Trouncing through.
Trouncing? I like that word.
Did whatever she wanted to do. And whatever she thought she could do.
I hope her ears are burning right now.
I do too, and I hope she's listening because she'll know who she is. Exactly. Right, witchling? Then she asked me, well, what do I do? Well, you go apologize.
You be real sorry.
And you be real sorry and you do this. And then it was that night we were talking there and she's like, well, are you coming with me? No, I'm not. You no. have to go and do this by yourself at midnight. At midnight? At midnight. Why? Because you're ending the old and starting the new. Yeah. And she had a good experience. She was talking to me for hours and hours up into the time to go. And she was scared to go.
She was. She definitely was.
She was scared to go.
She wanted me to park down the road just in case. I was like, no, you have to do this.
Yeah.
You have to do this. There's no other way around it. And it shows growth, too.
It does.
Not just as a person, but spiritually, too.
Spiritually, it shows growth. Yeah. Like, if you mess up in a mundane world, you walk up to the person, you say, I messed up. I'm really sorry. And you try and make it better. If you mess up in the spiritual part of yourself, that's where you got to go deeper. That's where you've got to think of the proper actions to take to correct it. Because in the mundane world, you screw up. People forget that.
Yeah.
The celestial doesn't forget it. Your soul doesn't forget it. So we send her back there, sent her with her offerings. She took her favorite stone, the one she was closest to, out of her collection.
That she had to sacrifice because she messed up.
She had to sacrifice it. She had to place it there. She gave it to the guardian. He let her in. He let her go in that night. And she went in and reflected on what she did wrong. And he followed her around. He was apprehensive about letting her in. But he followed her around to make sure she was there to do it correctly.
Yes.
Because she had offended him.
She pushed some boundaries, that's mm-hmm. for sure. But she made it right, and you know that's growth. That's it growth is. Right there.
And what can any of us do but except grow? There is 10,000 books in every walk of spirituality, in every walk of witchcraft, in every walk of Wicca. But there is no one book designed for each of us. So we're all going to make mistakes. I made mistakes. I'm sure you made mistakes.
Oh boy.
I had mistakes that followed me for years until I figured out what those mistakes were and corrected them.
Well, that's because you can't run from the demon. You just got to turn around and face it.
Right? Because it's not like a human being that you can actually hide from.
No, exactly. It follows you. Mm-hmm. It follows you. It's like attached to you. You can feel it. And you just feel so much heavier, too, when it's on you. You just got to deal with it. It's also like a lot of, like you said before, mundane people will use it and call it guilt mm-hmm. instead. Mm-hmm. Oh, I feel guilty about this. No, that is something you have to deal with yourself.
Well, exactly right. And I guess, like, the more you see people waking up, it's the biggest awakening, I think, in history. What we're seeing right now. So we're having an influx of all of these people who are being made aware of what we really are. What our true soul's journey is. It's not to wake up in the morning to pay taxes and die. And we don't just start here. And we don't end here. But what we do here is a lesson. And each time we pass a lesson, we get a new one. And then we've picked out our life before we even came here. Each one of our souls has picked its life. It's picked its lessons. As it's like before you incarnate, it's like being standing in front of a table at college, picking out your courses and your course selection. And we do this many, 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 many times. So we all have to learn lessons. Some people live a hard life because they need to learn that hard life lesson.
So I totally believe in reincarnation. I believe that our soul has lived numerous times. And I do believe that at some point, your soul kind of just stops and you're done. Once you figure out what your task is in life here and you've like kind of accomplished it or figured it out and dealt with it, then your soul just kind of mm-hmm. ends there. Because I tell you, my soul is really freaking tired right now.
Right.
Really tired.
But when we get to the end of what we're supposed to do here.
Yes.
This might go right, might go wrong. But when we die, it's just our soul leaving our meat suit.
I love that meat suit. Yes, meat suit.
That's all it is.
That's all it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's our brain and our tail or spine.
It's our it, it, it's It's just the energy that's sent down from source.
It is. And I had a client come into the shop and he said, technically, we're not like one being, like you said before. We are literally a little bit of everything, like one singular molecule from every single planet, every single star, mm-hmm. and everything, all, like you said before, a celestial being, all put into one person.
So, speaking of stars and celestial and everything like that, I read, well, I didn't actually physically read it because I have to do audiobooks at work while I'm driving. I read a book the other night, 7-hour book. It was called Letters to a Starseed.
Oh, I love that one.
Right? And it makes you, like, even for somebody of me that thinks outside of what's right here, right now. Because I grew up young, and I was blinded by a lot of things, and I was covered up. And then I moved in with my aunt, and I was about 11 or 12. And my aunt had this big, well, not big, it was beautiful, beautiful magic room and sacred space. And my aunt was a pagan witch. And she started teaching me and opening me up and showing me what my true traits were. And then I did some stupid shit.
We all do. Don't feel bad.
And then I scared myself. And then I shut it off for a lot of years. And then you try to grab it back. But then you get ridiculed. So you just kind of like tuck it away. And the awakening I was talking about a little while ago is what I did some years back. What everybody's doing. We're finding our true callings. And I don't mean I'm going to be a truck driver. I'm going to be a doctor. I'm going to be a nurse. Not those callings. Our celestial callings. We're each here for a reason. We're each here to be one being.
To work together.
To work together. To help each other learn.
Isn't it weird that we had to be divided to realize that we needed to be united after all?
Right? Exactly. Like, for instance, you ever walk down the street and you get a sense, or you meet somebody, and you get a sense of, like, I know you, but you don't know them. You know you've never met them. But from the moment you meet that person, you feel this closeness, you feel a bond. You were meant to cross that soul's path.
Yeah.
Because you and that soul made an agreement to cross paths. Because you knew them before. Mm. It's like people be like having such vivid, lucid dreams. Mm. Or walking down the street and they see a person in their vision or whatever. And they're in a castle lit by candles, wearing medieval clothing, doing medieval things. That feels so real and so attached to them. It's because they're unlocking past memories.
Yeah.
Past lives. Past things that we've done.
Yeah.
Which was a past lesson. It's just lessons. It's all we're supposed to learn.
It's just one lesson after another.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've had two different clients that have come into the shop, and I just want to kind of scooch right back over to reincarnation here. I've had two clients come in, and I've had two people that had two different views on reincarnation. So, like you had said before, your soul passes on, you go to the source, you find out what you were supposed to be doing, you're like, I'm going to remember, I come back, you come back to the earth, you completely forget because you're a baby, and then you spend that whole life trying to figure out the purpose, and so on and so forth. It's a repeated pattern. But I also had another client that came in and said that they believed that reincarnation was all done in one singular life, because you're not the same person that you were when you were a baby, so that would have been a life. You're not the same person that you were when you were a teenager, so that would have been a different life. You're not the same person that you were when you were in your 20s, so that's a different life, and so on and so forth. What is your opinion on that?
I could see some of the idea behind that.
Yeah.
Because as we grow, we learn and we level up. We go through stages.
So, and we're passing those lessons that you're messaging. mentioning before.
Right? Passing lessons. But where my thought on reincarnation comes is that we come, and this whole, whether it's 2 years, 110 years, however long we're here, okay?
110, each, I wish.
No, I don't. I don't. each reincarnation is a different length, different lessons, different groups of things that we've chose to do and learn.
Yes.
And reason I think that each life is a reincarnation. Look at these child prodigies, okay? You look at a 3-year-old kid that can get on the piano and play Beethoven's Fifth.
Remarkable.
Remarkable. You look at a 4-year-old kid that can pick up 6-string electric guitar and play Carlos Santana.
I saw a TikTok with a baby that wasn't even 2 yet and he was snowboarding.
Exactly.
I can't even snowboard, I'm 36.
Exactly. How did they learn those skills? Past incarnation. And they are advanced enough in their knowledge and in their spirit's essence to bring their knowledge with them. And just bust it out. Because there's no way that a 3-year-old, 4-year-old could sit down, grab an electric guitar and play Carlos Santana.
Love that song.
Right? Nothing by him. Not even his easiest riff. Because of how crisp, how clear, how... excuse me. How many years of practice that takes. The 3-year-old that I seen playing Mozart's Fifth Symphony on piano. Can't figure that out by your time of 3.
So, a couple days ago, I want to talk about a little bit of an experience with you guys and with you, Chad, because I know you're a little versed in astral projecting as well, too. I had this wonderful couple come in. Wife was pregnant. I'm going to leave names out of it. And the husband was there. Well, he had gone about a week ago. He had been out camping because the ice wasn't frozen enough to do any kind of ice fishing. And he was kind of out there calling for anything. Just so everybody knows out there, witchcraft is very new. It's being reintroduced to us and stuff like that. Please, please, please be careful. It's a very powerful time, especially right before Valentine's Day and especially right after Valentine's Day. And any time around a new moon, just don't do it, okay? So anyways, he's out in the bushes and he called it a shapeshifter or a skinwalker. Everything was fine. He spent his night out there. He ended up going back home. And afterwards, he started feeling not good. He started waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, full body paralysis, couldn't move. And he said he could hear the singing. Well, this creature had come in the form of what looked like his wife. So he would constantly ask this thing when he did get the option to speak. He would constantly ask the skinwalker questions about himself to see if he can differentiate between his wife and this demon, he liked to call it. So, of course, we show up, ended up torching the thing. It was so cool. Ash everywhere. Like, I can't even describe it. It was just, like, absolutely one of the most wonderful experiences, but also, like, holy shit, right? So, anyways, ended up removing this. He had the greatest sleep. Everything was all good again. And then he had mentioned to me that prior to, he had been practicing with astral projecting. Now, astral projecting is when you are manipulating the vibrations and you're manipulating your mind. So you got to kind of keep your mind quiet, at ease. A lot of people can kind of get to that point by drinking blue lotus tea, having bath bombs, doing bath rituals, crystals. You can astral project really nicely after a good session of Reiki. So he had been trying to astral project. And so, not last night, but the night before, he had gone to bed. And same thing, but it was different this time. He didn't have body paralysis. He felt the paralysis in just his face. So he believes that he accidentally astral projected. And while he was in the other dimension, a contract was handed to him to sign. Now, I want to warn you, astral projecting is wonderful. It's a great time if you do it properly. But we're going to go into a little bit more detail here with Chad on astral projecting. So what is your opinion on that, and how could he have done that differently?
Oh, was so many different ways that he could have done that differently. I feel that when you want to astral project, that you need to have a clear and defined intention for the projection. Because you end up in the astral, maybe you're the only one there. Maybe you're not. And other people are there and try to interact with you. Like when he was handed a contract, like did he sign the contract?
No contract was signed.
No contract.
But just the fact that he got himself into that situation was concerning.
Mm-hmm.
And how it was just so sporadic and so random. Like,
right? You really have to be leery of what's going on in the astral. And just going there just to willy-nilly go astral, it's really not, if you're not going there with a clear question, looking for a clear answer, trying to find something out, it's a tool that we can use to better our own journey through this.
So kind of like a spot where our soul can go to recharge.
It can. Like it can go to recharge. It can go... it can go meet another soul. There are people who will go astral. Say, for instance, you or me move other side of the world. The other one of us is still here. Both practice astral. You can go see each other there.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
You can go meet up. You can use the energy there to learn quicker, to make answers clearer. You can use it to look down on your own situation that is happening around you.
Like your soul will kind of leave your body, but there's always some kind of string or light or being connecting you to your meat suit still.
Exactly. Your meat suit and you are still connected. You can't get stuck. I've heard of people saying, oh, you can get stuck in the astral. My belief, you can't get stuck in the astral because you can come back. For instance, you're sleeping, okay? You're dead asleep in your bed. You're dreaming. Your dream takes a shift. And things are happening. And then your worldly mind has a realization that you're not there. You know that slam back into the bed you feel?
Yep.
That's you slamming back into your body.
Or when you feel like you're falling mm-hmm. in bed, but you're just laying there?
Right.
Yeah.
It's because you were leaving. And those of us who, I guess you could say, have opened our minds up enough to the fact that it's not just what we're shown to believe the world and life is. That there is more out there. That there is a whole other part of us that we can, each and every one of us, can get in tune with. That's bringing you back. It doesn't usually happen to seasoned practitioners because we know we're out of our body.
So it doesn't scare us.
Doesn't scare us.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get to the astral or you start, like, because you'll have those feelings where you're like, you feel like you're floating up. You know you're laying on a bed or you're laying in a bathtub or wherever you are. You know you're there, but then you feel like you're floating up.
Yeah.
And then that's when the fear kicks in, and then you disconnect from the astral and you come back down to the reality of the world that we're in now.
And that's when you feel like you're falling.
That's when you feel like you're falling, or the big thud, or just sometimes it's not even falling, it's just it's a jolt. And that's, I believe myself, that's you coming in back into your own body.
Yes.
I haven't felt it in a long time.
I love doing that.
The thud?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just, for most people,
I guess I
could see how it'd startle some people, but me, it's almost like, you know, when you're like coming down in an airplane right before you land, you kind of get like that cabin pressure.
You get that cabin pressure.
But you have that reassurance that, well, I'm almost on the ground.
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a reassuring feeling coming back.
Yeah.
Because even though we know you're not staying there, can't get stuck there,
No, can't get stuck there. Don't sign anything, though. Don't sign anything.
Don't sign anything. If you don't know someone, I don't even interact.
Yeah, exactly.
But you can feel the person a lot better up there than you can here.
Yeah.
Because it's just energy there. Yeah. There's no body. There's no... Here, there's too much... Do I look good? Do these pants fit? How's my hair? Does this hat go with my shoes?
We got too much of an ego.
We do.
Too much ego.
I've been learning a lot lately in our circles and our semi-ceremonies for Wheel of the Year solstices, for the new moons that we're having. In our rituals, we have our ritual. We also have a self-expression. Things that we're learning. And we all think as we're growing up here, I gotta be the best at this. I gotta be the best at this. Everybody's gotta see me doing this. And everybody, it's exactly what you said. It's the ego.
Yeah.
But the more you let go of that ego and you just live freely without needing the approval of others, the more full your life will feel.
Yeah.
The more in touch with source you'll feel. The more awake you'll become. Because when you can start looking beyond the meat suits and the... I refer to it as the Matrix a lot.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about it, people will understand that. Because you are. You are stuck. We are stuck in a Matrix.
We are, I know.
We're stuck to believe that this is the world, this is how we live, and this is what we see.
Yeah.
A lot of things like religion, and we, for instance, Kronos, the horn god.
Yeah.
To convert pagans to Christians, they used our own god against us. Because he's a horn god, he must be the devil.
Yeah.
So he was transferred over to the Christian Catholic devil. And he was bad. And he was the bearer of all things bad. That's why, in witchcraft, we are seen to be devil worshippers. Because our god...
Was bastardized right from the beginning. Well, of course.
Why do you think the pentagram's bastardized?
Yeah.
Because in its original version, which is point down, it's the horned god. Right? They don't look at pentacle, pentagram, whatever you want to refer to it as, the right way. Everybody looks at it as a sign of Satanism.
Is that why they use the goat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is why they use the goat.
Excellent.
Because it looks like a billy goat upside down.
It does.
Right? What people don't understand is those 5 points stand for something. They stand for earth, air, water, fire, and spirit.
Spirit was added much later. Yeah.
And the circle that holds it all together is the universe, holding everything together.
And it is frowned upon for so long.
Right?
So long. I'm so glad we're making this clear. Everybody, it's not a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. That's why I love wearing shorts in the summer, so everybody can see mine on my leg.
Excellent. So, Chad, I also want to talk about your circles that you do and your rituals a little bit here before we shut this down for the night.
Okay. So, I have a... call it a group, call it a coven, call it a collective.
So there are other covens out there for pagans right now.
There are other covens.
Just for the other pagans out there listening right now.
There are other covens out there for pagans. One thing being pagan you have to remember is all Wiccans are pagans, but not all pagans are Wiccans.
Okay, elaborate okay. a little.
Not all are as nature-bound
yeah,
as some look at the Viking side of the pagan, and they see the heathen, they see that, right? But then you look at the nature-based side of it, which is Wiccan. Some people don't like to call themselves Wiccan because they see Wiccan because of the rules as a ruled religion.
Yeah.
Right? But, so circles, every Sabbath, which comes every 5 to 7 weeks, I have a group that I get together with, religiously, every, I use that
no
word.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. spiritually, I get together with, and we are together for the evening. It starts off, we arrive, we, at the beginning of the year, we have a meeting. We choose our crafts, our, we lay out how our year is going to go. We plan out all of it. And then for the remaining seven Sabbaths, every, we start with a craft that is related to the Sabbath. Whether it be, we've made corn husk dollies, we've made besoms, we've made witches balls, we've made so many different things throughout the year. And what that does is that brings us to, and gets us grounded in sacred space, gets us thinking about why we're there and physically doing something
to celebrate the earth.
Celebrate it, to yeah. celebrate what has been given. When we arrive, whoever is leading the circle at that point, to this point it has been one of us leading the circle. We're going to start stepping out and having each of us, when we're each ready, lead a circle.
Is there a fairly large group of you guys? Or
depending on which part of the year we're in, we can be anywhere between 6 and 15.
Oh, so there is quite
there
a
large... is quite a few of us that get together. We show up. Each of us are saged. We are cleansed. We're welcome to sacred space.
Do you guys do like the potlucks and stuff like
we
that?
We do.
And teas.
We
and
each
everything.
Bring. We each bring. An offering for the potluck.
Oh, I love that.
So we get together, and as people get there, because everybody shows up slightly different times apart, the craft kind of helps blend that all together. Because as we get there, we greet the hosts, we put down our offering for dinner, and then we find out what the craft of the night is, and then we get in and we start making our craft. And this happens and keeps rotating as people arrive to sacred space. And then once we've all finished our craft, and as others are still working on theirs or whatever, then we all start filtering out to potluck. And then in the sitting area, we're sitting down, we're conversing, asking how everybody's doing. But we're always being mindful of that we're in the here and now, we're in this space. So we're not talking about like life and the job and this and that. It's how we're doing on our journey. So then once everybody's done crafts and once everybody's eaten, we get to a certain point and we open our circle. We used to have it where the leader of the circle was the only participant. We were all participants. Leader was the only one doing anything. She would call the quarters, call the god and the goddess in, invite the god and the goddess's energies in to witness, then go around and set sacred space. Then we would, while in sacred space, we'll be conversing. There's no spells, there's no incantations, there's chants, there's ritual speeches, stuff like that go along the circle.
Getting naked and running through the forest in the moonlight?
Not quite.
Not now, it's too cold?
Not now, it's too cold right now.
Yeah, it's not hunting season either, so.
No sky clad with ice. no sky clad with icicles. and then when we go into... But each circle is we, whether it be Samhain, Imbolc, any one of them, we have a part of our ritual that pays homage to that, and that's why we're here. We all share in there. We have our intentions. We have a look back on, while we're in sacred space, on our last 6 weeks, where we've grown, where we've shrunk, where we've stumbled, and where we've held each other up.
So it sounds like a big family.
It is. And we all see each other that way. It's a group of people guaranteed
to have
that when you reach out, no matter what day, no matter what time, no matter what, they're there to hold you up.
And they probably have a spell for that.
Probably.
Yeah.
There's a spell for everything.
Chad also makes amazing custom wands as well. Just give us a call prior to you and with your designs, and I'm sure Chad would love to whip up one of those.
I would love to.
At any point?
I would love to. Yeah. I love making my own wands, yes, and putting them out, but I also totally accept somebody else's ideas and what they would want for their wand, and I would be honored to make a wand in a person's image.
Ah, that is wonderful. So yes, anybody wants a customized wand or any questions about it, please reach out to the Coven House. Thank you so much, Chad, for coming on to the show. I look forward to having you again, and if anybody has any questions at all, call down to the Coven House or just reach out, and we're happy to answer any and all questions. Have a good night.
Bye, all.